Welcome to Little Demons. I'm your host, Eris Strife, and you're not gonna believe what just fucking happened. So I had recorded this all before, twice. And I was in the process of editing. I had stopped for a couple of days, went to go back to edit, half of it, gone. Don't know where it went, just disappeared, gone, doesn't exist anymore. I checked the files, I checked my Google Drive, I checked my phone, they're just gone. So I am super pissed off, and this is my third time recording, and quite frankly, I am tired of talking about this asshole. So today, again, we're going to be talking about Patrick Brown. And for my foreign listeners, who are my only listeners, hi Greg, hi James. Patrick Brown was, up until recently, the provincial leader of the Conservative Party for Ontario. Now, just so you can get an idea of the scope of this story, I'm going to very, very briefly break down Canadian political system for you super quick. Because the last thing that I would want is for you to shoot yourself in the foot just out of sheer boredom. And I'm going to compare this to the States just because I know their system a little bit better. I know fuck all about Australia. Sorry, buddy. So in Canada, we have two main parties. They're the Liberals and the Conservatives. And to compare it to the States, the Liberals are like the Democrats, the Conservatives are like the Republicans, but way more central on the political scale. We also have a fun little one called the NDP. They don't really hold much clout. They're kind of like the nerdy friend that stops the two jocks from ripping each other's heads off. And nobody knows really what they stand for. I think they focus on workers' rights. I'm really not too sure. And I have a political science degree, so I am literally the biggest shit. I feel awful, but at the same time, I really don't care. Because personally, I think they were just created so that we could pass laws faster. And you know, they work as a pretty good balance when one party leans too far left or too far right. And if anyone in Canada is listening, you know you heard somewhere about some law at some point trying to be passed by either the Conservatives or the Liberals, and the NDP pulled through and stopped it, and you go, thank God for the NDP. So anyways, we have our political parties, the Conservatives, the Liberals, the NDP. And the way that our country is broken up is it's broken up into provinces and territories. Provinces are similar to the states of the United States, and our territories are basically Puerto Rico, but cold as fuck. So we're talking about the provinces, and the people that govern these provinces are called premiers, which are comparable to your state governors. So Patrick Brown was the head of the Conservatives for Ontario. So if he was in power, he would be the governor of Ontario, basically. But that's not the case. The Liberals currently hold that honor. But anyways, this whole Patrick Brown situation started on January 24th of this year. 2018. 6 months before a provincial election. Now, I'm going to be completely honest. I had no idea that we were coming up to an election until I started looking into this story. Honestly, the university should just take back my degree. I do not deserve it. So on January 24th at 9 p.m., CTV announces that two women have come forward alleging sexual misconduct against Patrick Brown. Now, I'm going to reference exactly what CTV reported because this comes into play later. So, CTV reports that the first incident happened with a woman who was still in high school at the time and had met him at a bar in Barrie, which is where he's from, she's from, his riding is, how he got into politics, blah, blah, blah. While she was under the legal drinking age of Ontario. And that is tricky journalism wording here in Canada. Because the legal age of consent here, so the age in which you're considered an adult and can do whatever the fuck you want, is 18. And I know that, at least in Ontario, depending on where your birthday falls and if you decide to do this, you can take an additional year in high school. It's called Victory Lap. That's when you finish 4 years of high school and instead of graduating, you decide to take another year around. Victory Lap. Because you did so well the first time, you just got to go around again. And a lot of people do this if they either don't have enough credits to graduate, their grades aren't good enough to get into university or college. And that's important because the legal drinking age in Ontario is 19. And if you want to dip your toe into the deep end of crazy conspiracies, we can take it a step further. There are three provinces in Canada where the legal drinking age is 18. So if their school system works the same way as Ontario can, you can be in high school and be the legal drinking age. So this is my theory. CTV worded it as the legal drinking age in Ontario because if this story reached Manitoba and Quebec, which chances are they did, their provinces right next to us, and I know for a fact that this reached Quebec, because Quebec and Ontario love nothing more than reporting gossip on each other. Seriously, this has been a feud that's been going on for centuries. It's ridiculous. And I can say that because I'm a Quebecer. It's fucking ridiculous. So anyways, had CTV just left it as they met at a bar and she was still in high school and under the legal drinking age, there is a possibility that it could be misconstrued that CTV is reporting she is a minor under the age of consent. And then that would imply that he was a kid diddler, and that would be a bold allegation for CTV to make. And the fact that CTV didn't just outright say minor makes me believe that they're insinuating that she was 18 at the time. So while she is not of legal drinking age, she is of legal age of consent. On the other hand, I could just be reading into that far too closely. So anyways, the first woman says that they met at a bar, she was drunk, because I don't know what it's like where you guys are, but here, if you're under the age of, let's say, 25 at least, if you're going to a bar at night, you're going out to get shit-faced. You're going out to get to party. So anyways, she meets Brown at the bar, partying, having a good time, and this is where she meets Patrick. Patrick invites her over back to his place, and she agrees because Patrick is sober at this time. And apparently, it's well known that Patrick Brown isn't a drinker. So she's drunk, he's sober, they go back to his place. He offers to give her a tour. So he's showing her around the place, and when they get to his bedroom, the first woman says, and for simplicity's sake, I'm going to call her Uno from now on. So Uno says to CTV that when we got to his room, he kind of shut the door on me and started making moves. He pulled down his pants and I don't know if he said suck my dick or put this in my mouth, but something along those lines. And in another article that CTV published later that night, they wind up elaborating on some of the details. And they say that Uno wound up sucking his knob. She said she wound up doing it for about 5 to 10 minutes. And Uno goes on to state that it was like a controlling thing. Like, I just remember I wanted to go, but that wasn't happening. And then she kind of comes to, like, what the fuck am I doing? Freaks out and is like, you need to let me out. I'm leaving. So she leaves and goes to a nearby friend's house. And all of this allegedly occurred when Uno was in her teens and Patrick Brown was in his late 20s. And I say allegedly because none of this has been proven in court. So the second woman that came forward, and we'll call her Doze. See how original I am? So anyways, Doze says that she met Patrick Brown on a flight. She was in university at the time in Ottawa, and during this time, Patrick was working as a federal MP, and our parliament is also in Ottawa, and they were both flying back home to Barrie. So they chat for a bit and then go their separate ways. And then later that evening, Dose receives a private message from Patrick Brown on Facebook, saying, are you impressed I remembered your name? I am. Lol. I normally have zero memory. Still not sure why you look so familiar. God, I hate when people say that. I get that all the time and it drives me insane. No, I'm 100% I don't know you. Fuck off. So anyways, he continues, I know we have met before, just not sure where. And I don't think it's the pilot connection. Anyways, ... If you're downtown tonight, maybe I'll bump into you. I'll be out with my friends at Ken's, Queen's, and the bank. And if you ever need to skip a line in downtown Barrie, just text me, and gives her his phone number. And then she brushes it off, like, haha, yeah, I suck at names too, and I don't know, I guess I just have one of those familiar faces. I can't count how many times I have sent virtually the same message word for word. So she just brushes it off as, you know, an older man trying to get a young piece of ass. And like so many first year university and college students do, she winds up moving back home that summer, which is in Barrie. And she's looking for a summer job. Now the thing is, it's really hard to find a job as a student because companies don't want to go through the process of hiring and then training someone just for them to fuck off in a few months. And then during 2012, 2013, trying to find a job, any job that wasn't retail, food industry, or working at a grocery store, you had to have an in to even have your resume looked at. And I know that because I was looking for the exact same thing Doze was, but I was looking for full-time. So imagine how hard it was for her to look for something, you know, for the summer. Okay, so I'm just going to pause right here and tell a little personal story. I went on this date with this guy recently, and we've been, like, texting back and forth still and blah, blah, blah. Right now, he's stuck in an elevator. And he's afraid of heights and apparently mildly claustrophobic. So he's freaking out right now. And I totally get it. I have the most bizarre anxiety triggers. Like, for example, right now, one of my neighbors in the apartments below me is barbecuing. And I'm kind of freaking out because I can see the smoke from my balcony. And my head is going, holy shit, the apartment's on fire. I need to grab Monster. What do I do? I'm gonna die. So I just kind of have to stop and think to myself and say, okay, Eris, the apartment building's not on fire because the fire alarm's not going off and this thing goes off at least once a month. Second of all, if there was that much smoke where it's billowing out of an apartment, don't you think it would have traveled into the other apartments by now and somebody would have sounded the alarm? So chances are the building's not on fire, we're good, I can calm down. But there's still that little nagging thought at the back of my head that just goes, yeah, but there's still that 1% chance. So yeah, I get it. And you know, he's a good dude. I dig his vibes. And, you know, I want to help. Really trying my best to be supportive and like trying to make him feel better through text message, of course. And so I'm just like, you got this, buddy. Everything will be okay. He's like, I have no idea what I am doing. But then the asshole part of me is going, you're gonna be okay, man. Seriously. When was the last time you heard of an elevator falling and crashing and killing someone? I mean, not to sound like too big of a dick, but don't you think that if elevators were crashing, we would be hearing about it? We'd have so much information thrown at us on a daily basis that we would hear somewhere that elevators were crashing and killing people. And I mean, sure, when elevators first became a thing, they were falling and killing people all the time. But I would like to think that as time progressed, you know, engineers work that shit out for the sake of my own sanity. So, I mean, chances are he's gonna be fine. I mean, yeah, there are some mitigating factors, like he lives in an older building, and he currently has an injured leg, and he's really into wrestling, so he doesn't want to risk fucking it up even more. But even still, I mean, like, dude, you're gonna be fine. So I'm trying really hard not to be a complete asshole, but honestly, I have no idea what I'm doing. And I am now 100% sure that I have painted myself as some weirdo. And not the cute and quirky kind of weird, but the lock your doors and look up how to get a restraining order type weird. Honestly, it is a total train wreck at this point. And I'm like, I'm trying not to be a complete dick and, you know, just like bursting out laughing. So then instead I'm sending messages that kind of like make me come across as slightly unhinged. And then I'm trying to correct that by, you know, sending messages that basically say, I am a good and stable choice to have in your life. Which is just, you know, making things even worse. I mean, like, he's never gonna want to see me again. And you know what? Totally fair. This one's on me. And before anyone gripes on me for being insensitive towards phobias, first of all, fuck you. Two, and I'm gonna let y'all in on a little Eris secret. I am terrified of zombies. Like, think about how you feel about spiders or bugs or heights. That's how I feel about zombies. And I'm not talking about the voodoo or voodoo zombies. I'm talking about Hollywood zombies. Night of the Living Dead, 28 Days Later, Zombieland, that sort of thing. I had nightmares to the trailer of Zombieland. And I'm probably going to have nightmares tonight by talking about zombies this much. Thought of me getting within touching distance of a zombie just, like, makes me just want to, like, crumble into non-existence. And I mean, like, I just feel like my heart is being grabbed and crushed, and, like, the fear grabs me so tight, I actually kind of want to throw up right now. And the thing is, they're zombies. They're not fucking real. I have this crippling phobia for something that doesn't exist in reality. And I find that hilarious. The stupidest, most irrational thing. It is. And I laugh at it because that's how I cope. And if you have a problem with that, then you can go fuck yourself. So anyways, where did I leave off before I got sidetracked? Oh yeah. Doze is looking for a summer job. Not only are you maybe looking for a summer job to pay for tuition, books, spending money, groceries, you know, general living expenses. But when you return to school in September, you might have to start paying rent as well. Here in Ontario, living on residence in, like, on campus is reserved for first years only. So when you enter second year, you know, you're expected to be living on your own and, you know, become an adult with responsibilities. And with the job environment being what it was, what better opportunity than the federal representative, Patrick Brown, because he was a federal MP at this time. That is a fucking in. And for all the people out there that are, oh, well, she shouldn't have exploited him like that if she was just looking for a job. No. This asshole shouldn't have even given her the opportunity because he thought her ass looked good or some shit. No, that's not true. Patrick Brown never said that he gave her the job because he thought her ass looked good or some shit. But you get the picture. So Doze calls up Patrick Brown and he winds up giving her a job in his Barrie constituency office. Later that summer, August 2013, Patrick Brown hosts his annual Hockey Night in Barrie charity event. That's some serious Canadian shit right there. So after the charity event, the campaign team that Doze is a part of decide to have a night out on the town. I don't know if you guys have done any event planning, but it's work. Fuck that shit. And of course, this includes Patrick, man of the hour, known for frequenting the night scene, even though he doesn't drink. So the group go to the bank. And if you may recall, in the initial message sent to Doze, Patrick mentions the bank. So this is the second time that this place is brought up in my research. So I got kind of curious to find out what type of establishment this is. And I managed to find a Yelp review from 2012 that I think gives a really good idea of the type of place this was. And I say was because it closed in 2015. So he gives the bank 2 out of 5 stars, and he writes, "Went to the bank nightclub over the May long weekend with a group of friends from Toronto who wanted to escape the Toronto scene for a night and had heard good things about it from friends. To me, a club is a club is a club, .. It's a club. There really wasn't much to distinguish this place from other night spots. It really felt like a Barrie club trying to be a trendy Toronto night spot. By the time midnight rolled around, the bank was so full of 18/19-year-olds, some definitely had fake IDs, and with that came all the problems associated with that demographic. Overdrinking, overdramatic, oversensitive, etc. The cherry on top was when a little 18-year-old bumped into me and tried to start a fight. Folks, I'm a lover, not a fighter. I shit you not, he actually wrote that. Amazing. So I quickly diffused the situation with ease and sent him on his way. I did flag for the bouncer this patron's behavior in case it became a problem for him later. His response was a little lackluster. Yeah, so what would you like me to do about it? Okay, maybe your job? Didn't say I didn't warn you. The DJ was also nothing special. I have friends who mix for a living, and the house DJ was definitely playing off of CDs. The transitions were noticeable and made dancing a little awkward at times. Thanks, DJ Press Play. All that aside, I will give the bank its due in two areas, which is why it received 2 stars from me, Yelp fans. If you're looking for cheap drinks, Barry is a great place to go. And the bank is no different. I had a Toronto-style night on about half of what I normally spend, so thumbs up on pricing. Secondly, their rooftop patio, Skybank, is actually gorgeous. It overlooks what I believe to be Georgian Bay, and the decor and layout was very well done. Funny, the youngster crowds didn't really appreciate this area, as it was virtually empty except for the occasional smoker coming outside to get some fresh air. Can't say I won't return to the bank, but certainly won't be my first choice next time the question comes up, what are we doing tonight? So that's the kind of place that the bank was. And that's where Patrick and his event team are out partying. At a nightclub that's filled with 18, 19-year-olds getting shit-faced. Because that's exactly what they're doing. Getting shit-faced because that's what you do when you're that age. And Patrick is around 35 at this time. So he's out at a club with a bunch of, you know, 18, 19-year-olds and sober. Now, I'm just going to go out and say this. I find that creepy as fuck because I hang out with 35-year-olds. And occasionally I might let one put their dick in me. For the most part, they don't want to hang out with 19-year-olds. And the ones that do are fucking creeps. So, dude, that's creepy. Stop that. So they party it up until the club closes. And so he invites Doze and another colleague over to his place to, I guess, keep the party going. So they go back to Patrick's place. And according to Doze's recount, she says that at this time she's hammered. She says that Patrick was just feeding her drinks all night long. Her exact words were, "too many to count." So they're back partying at his house. And at one point he invites Doze and another colleague upstairs to look at some pictures from his most recent trip to Asia. At some point, the other colleague leaves, leaving Brown and Doze together in his bedroom alone. So Doze says to CTV, allegedly, "the next thing I know, he's kissing me, sitting beside me, kissing me, and then I was kind of just froze up. He continued to kiss me and laid me down on the bed and got on top of me. I remember consciously trying not to move my mouth, and I was just not moving. So I was lying there, immobile, and he just kept kissing me. I felt it was sexual. I could feel his erection on my legs when he was on top of me, so I felt like it would have gone to sexual intercourse if I had not done anything. I would characterize that as sexual assault." Now, she finally gets the gumption to be like, "yo, please stop. You know, I have a boyfriend. Can you please take me home?" So then Brown allegedly stops and drives her home. And she continues to work for him after this because her reasoning for it was she didn't want it to impede on something that she thought was a career opportunity. Because think about it, he's her reference. So if she were to get a job anywhere else, she doesn't want to run the risk of him giving her a bad reference. And this is probably, you know, her first white-collar type job. So she doesn't want to run the risk of pissing off the boss because that could prevent her from getting a job elsewhere. I mean, fuck, I've been there. And she also continues by saying, "I didn't think that there was any sort of recourse that I could take because I did think this was something that maybe another job I would go to HR about. But I don't even know who HR was in this context, particularly being in a constituency office. I mean, I just didn't know what to do." I mean, she was 19 at the time. You remember when you were 19. And at one point, he allegedly asked her to join him on a trip to India because he travels there a lot and she'd be working as his assistant. He allegedly says that he'll pay all the expenses. And he also gives her a raise. Regarding the trip to India, she says, "he told me that he thought that I would look really good on an elephant. I remember thinking, well, would I have my own hotel room? I remember thinking, is there some sort of expectation?" So allegedly shit like that's going on. And apparently there's various other inappropriate comments and so forth. And eventually she tells her father about all this. And she says she remembers feeling so relieved that I told somebody. And CTV affirms this, and they also affirm that she recounted the story to three other people as well. So those are the alleged events as reported by CTV on January 24th. And this initial story broke at 9 p.m. And then at 9:45, Patrick Brown has a press conference to address these allegations. And right away when you come out, you know he's pissed. Like, he has this, we're getting down to business look. So he goes up to the podium or, like, stand thing. And some articles' headlines were, a teary Patrick Brown. No. His voice cracks at the very beginning. But after that, it is all rage all the time. You know, he's making very abrupt and firm gestures. And you know, he keeps pointing at his speech like somehow that's going to prove his innocence to everyone. So anyways, his statement. First, I want to say these allegations are false, categorically untrue, every one of them. I will defend myself as hard as I can with all the means at my disposal. It is never okay for anyone to feel they've been a victim of sexual harassment or feel threatened in any way. Let me make this clear. A safe and respectful society is what we expect and deserve, and no one appreciates that more than I do. I've got two younger sisters who are my best friends. I've grown up in a family that has taught me good values. My values and beliefs are those that we need to move forward to eradicate sexual violence and harassment across the province, across the country, everywhere. I know the court of public opinion moves fast. I've instructed my attorneys to ensure that these allegations are addressed where they should be, in a court of law. In short, I reject these accusations on the strongest possible terms. It's not my values. It's not how I was raised. It's not who I am. Dude, you're supposed to be a politician. You're supposed to be in tune with your people. You know, if you actually were paying attention to what was going on around you, you would know that the court of public opinion, which you mention, has the ability to destroy lives. Because don't forget, this was happening during, you know, Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey and Louis C.K. These people, on a global scale, let's face it, Mr. Brown, are far more important than you are. So what sort of clout do you think that you have to go against the vicious beast that is the court of public opinion? And I'm not saying vicious beast in a bad way. I admire the fuck out of the weight that public opinion can have. Whether you think it's good or bad, you have to admit there's something admirable about it. So after he gives his statement, he's leaving the building. And I guess to leave the building, you have to go down a couple flights of stairs. And of course, you know, big breaking story. So there are reporters and photographers just like crowding him and paparazzing him, you know, asking a bunch of questions. And he's just like tight-lipped and doing that thing like, I'm just going to pretend that you're not here, sort of thing, completely ignoring them. The only thing that he will say is, you know, very curtly, I will be back in the office tomorrow. Pretty much just like that. I think the entire time of him going down the stairs is 3 minutes or something like that. But it's like the most awkward thing to watch. And the video footage that's shown is right up the guy's nose. It's just super uncomfortable. So Patrick gives his statement at 9:45. Not even 10 minutes later, his campaign team quits. Because don't forget, at this time, we're 6 months from an election. Really don't blame them, because their job is in public relations. And something like a sexual misconduct allegation is a PR nightmare. Oh yeah, so that's another thing to note. So what has been reported is a sexual misconduct allegation. Not sexual harassment, not sexual assault, not rape. And basically what that is they're calling him out for being douchey. So wouldn't it be nice if, you know, our politicians weren't douchebags? So remember how Patrick said that he'd be at the office tomorrow? So at 1 a.m. of, you know, which would be technically the next day, he announces that he is resigning as Ontario's provincial Conservative leader, saying that he needs to focus on clearing his name and that one man isn't greater than the Conservative mission to beat Kathleen Wynne, who's the current Premier of Ontario, in this upcoming election. God damn, what a hero. And so after Patrick resigns, he just kind of fucks off for a while. Like, doesn't make any appearances, doesn't talk on any social media, like, zip, not a zilch. Pretty much disappears from the public eye. Now the talk around this is, not only did he do what he allegedly did, but also, was it fair that he got stonewalled into resigning? Because what also comes out is his campaign team and his PR reps, when they found out about this, the best course of action for both Patrick and the Conservative Party would be to resign. But Patrick said no. So people are saying, well, is that really fair? None of this has been proven in court. He lost his job, his career, his livelihood. I mean, personally, I don't give a shit. I think the guy's a twat anyway, so... So while looking into this, I found an article that I'll share a little snippet from that really sums up the thoughts of the people that really didn't see his actions as a big deal, and the way that he was treated regarding these allegations was unfair. So the following is from this article. I doubt that there are many male Canadians above the age of 40 who have never committed acts similar to those alleged against Patrick Brown, including Justin, referring to Justin Trudeau, and me, the writer. Though not involving women who were subordinate, sex motivates most people at times. Sometimes the response is positive, and sometimes not. But they are not usually consequential, much less unlawful, acts. And these laudations of the courage of the accusers are getting a little tiresome. It doesn't take much courage to come out of the woodwork of the past and accuse a public person of minor improprieties, with no supportive evidence and with the cloak of total anonymity. Ultimately, the principal duty of every public official is to protect the rights of all people. Patrick Brown vigorously denies that he did what is claimed, and this episode should be irrelevant to his ability to lead a political party now, besmirching and disposing him in a P-U-T-S-C-H. Google that. Like this, given the absence of support from his caucus, may indicate that he is not Alexander the Great, nor Napoleon as a leader of men, but it is still an injustice. Wanna know who wrote that? Conrad Black. Who the fuck's bright idea thought it would be a good idea to publish this asshole? Okay, it was the National Post and owns it, but still... In a story like this where, you know, news outlets and journalists and reporters are being criticized or being scrutinized for their credibility, because that's the other thing that's going on during this time. CTV's credibility is being questioned, you know, the integrity of their reporters and their journalists. So, you know, you'd think that during an event where journalistic integrity is being questioned, don't you think it would be a good idea to maybe not publish an article by somebody that was arrested for fraud? I mean, the ego on this guy, it's awful. And I mean that traditional sense, as in, it is both terrifying and admirable at the same time. But don't get me wrong, I think Conrad Black is just the king of twats.
Actually, you know what? No.
I'm gonna say this right here, right now. Conrad Black, you can go fuck yourself. Because here's the thing. And we're going to get a little personal. I'm going to let you in on a little era secret. I was kind of diddled as a kid. Not by any family or anything like that. And as far as kid diddling goes, at least I can say for certainty he didn't rape me. But there was like fondling and groping and inappropriate shit. And it was still traumatic. I mean, I was a fucking kid at the time. And I think I made it pretty obvious that I was in a hella abusive relationship not too long ago. I think it was around 5 years ago that it ended. But not only was it really abusive psychologically and emotionally, occasionally physically, but he pulled some seriously fucked up sexual shit. But despite all that shit, I never went to the police about any of them. Like, even now, I never went to the police. Never filed charges. You know, talked about it among friends, but the kid dealing one, not so much. But my super douchey abusive ex-boyfriend, absolutely, because he's a douchebag. Quite frankly, I probably won't, because I don't want to deal with it. You know, I've dealt with this my entire life. And right now, I can honestly say I'm good. I'm in a really good place in my life. You know, for the first time, probably in my life, I've actually been able to push past all the damage that they did to me. And actually be able to be the person that I've always felt I was outside of these controlling assholes. And you know what? No, I don't think it's fair that they got away with abusing me horribly, pretty much unscathed. But you know what? As much as I hate to say it, I'm okay with that. It makes me angry, and I wish that, you know, if one of them got hit by a bus tomorrow and died, I would have zero qualms over that. In fact, I would probably high-five the bus driver. But other than that, they're not worth my time, because they've already taken enough of it. And so this is why I'm telling Conrad Black to go fuck himself. Because if I found out either of my abusers are running for office, let alone, you know, to be the leader of our province, you're fucking right I would come forward and say, hey, this guy's an asshole. Maybe not elect him. And I probably wouldn't know that they're in politics at all until they ran for some high power position, because I don't keep tabs on their life. Jesus fucking Christ, why would I do that? I have better shit to do than be wondering what the fuck my abusers are up to. So yeah, I would come forward and say, this is what this guy did to me. He's an asshole. Don't vote for him. And I probably would do it anonymously too, because I don't want to deal with the bullshit.
What these women went through after they came forward was complete bullshit. I don't want to deal with that. Fuck that. And the other thing too, Mr. Black, is that it's not just people over the age of 40 that are acting in the way that was alleged against Patrick Brown. It's, you know, teenagers and 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds and etc. that act in this way. The issue is people have come forward and said, hey, you know what would be really awesome is if, you know, we met at a bar and then went back to your place to hang out afterwards. If, you know, you didn't then tell me to put your dick in my mouth. That would be really great. And people have come forward and voiced how they would like to be treated. Yet that's still not happening. That's what the issue is.
But yeah, I read that and then saw who wrote it and just raged out for a good solid couple hours. The guy's an asshole. So yeah, shit like that's going around. And then we kind of went into that weird lull, kind of like the calm before the storm, where there wasn't really any new information to be reported on until February 6th, when Patrick Brown probably does the stupidest thing he could possibly do. He decides to go on social media. Now, I'm going to lay down the first rule right here, right now. If you're in any sort of public position where your livelihood is dependent on how the public sees you, and now you're under scrutiny, do not go on social media. Hire a PR rep, give them all your social media accounts and passwords, give them your laptop, your computer, your iPad, your smartwatch, whatever, give that all to a PR rep and then fuck off to the woods and disappear until the masses get bored and move on. But no, Patrick goes to Twitter, and on February 6th, he tweets, I am immensely grateful for all the support expressed to my family and myself. Hashtag me too. Yeah, he went there. Can be a tool to lift society, and I applaud that effort. False allegations, however, undermine that good work. The truth will come out. Thank you to all.
To give you some sort of timeline of events here, Conrad Black wrote his opinion piece on February 2nd. CTV broke the story on January 24th. And during this time, not a peep from Patrick Brown. And meanwhile, the Conservatives are scrambling to elect a new party leader because we have a provincial election coming up in 4 months at this time. And then Patrick Brown decides to do probably the stupidest thing he could possibly do for his career. Because at this point in time, he's still a provincial MP. He's just not the head honcho anymore. I mean, he could have fucked off to Barrie and still had a relatively decent life. He'll never be premier, but he could have still had a say in how the province was run if the Conservatives wound up winning the election. But no, instead he decides to take to Twitter. Now I'm going to lay down the first rule right now. If you are under any sort of public scrutiny, do not go on social media. Better yet, hire yourself a PR representative. Give them your cell phone, your laptop, your tablet, any sort of electronic device, social media logins, your email passwords and all that shit, and then fuck off to the woods until people get bored and this all blows over. But no, Patrick decides not to do that. But instead, on February 6th, he tweets, "I am immensely grateful for all the support expressed by my family and myself. Hashtag MeToo can be a tool to lift society, and I applaud that effort. False allegations, however, undermine that good work. The truth will come out. Thank you all." And that, to this day, is still pinned on his Twitter account. And then the next day, or at least the next couple of days, then the Toronto Sun winds up publishing front page picture of Patrick Brown and in big bold letters, absolute lies, accusations false. And for those of you that are not familiar with the Toronto Sun, it is considered a credible news source, probably the same as the National Enquirer is considered a credible news source. It's a trashy tabloid newspaper. I mean, some things that they report are factual, but for the most part, I take what the Toronto Sun publishes with a grain of salt. And throughout the week, there's various reports that come out that say that he has proof that the allegations are false. He has witnesses that can prove it. But you know, like, nothing really specific in terms of clearing his name. Like, it's not like he's coming out saying that, like, nothing saying that he has a recording with, you know, the head of CTV News and the two women that came forward conspiring against him. Like, nothing saying, you know, that he has a recording of them in a room saying, oh yeah, we're gonna go after Patrick Brown and we're gonna make up these accusations. Nothing like that. So then on February 11th, he posts on Facebook. Yeah, I know, we're dealing with a 14-year-old girl here. He says, "Earlier this week, I said the truth will come out. I have been investigating the anonymous allegations against me and can prove they are false. I will clear my name. The first accuser told a story about an incident that she claimed took place on my second floor, upstairs bedroom with the door closed. At the time of the alleged incident, I lived on a ground floor, open concept apartment, and there was no second floor bedroom nor a door to any bedroom. This story is false. Interestingly, I understand from the first accuser's Facebook and from people we both know that she was housemates with the CTV reporter. The second accuser's story is also absurdly false. It was she who tried to kiss me, while the woman I was seeing was in another room. I stopped her immediately and offered to drive her home, which I did. There are at least three witnesses, one of whom even spoke to CTV, that refute the details of her allegations. CTV left that out of the story. Since the alleged incident, the accuser regularly presented herself as being my supporter and friend, including attending my events. She sat at a supporter table at my speech at the Economic Club of Canada in November 2016, requesting I connect with my colleagues to help her write certain articles as recently as last year, liking a significant number of my Facebook posts long after she left my office. And, in fact, she even helped out my leadership campaign. It is now known that this accuser and one of my reporters had a prior relationship. They both worked and socialized together. At no time did she ever act as someone who was anything but a friend and a supporter. This story is false." Big capital letters, both times. "The Me Too movement is important. I support it. I embrace it. My drive to public service includes creating a safe and more respectful world for women. The Me Too movement is too important to allow outrageous allegations like these to derail it. These past weeks have been hard. The hardest of my life. The night of January 24th was like being hit by a truck. No words can describe the hurt and pain suffered by me and my family. Yet I find myself overwhelmed by the support for me across this beautiful province of ours. Thank you for believing me and believing in me. Thank you for your outrage at what happened to me. I am a fighter. For my family, my constituents, and for the citizens of Ontario, I will now fight for my name and reputation." So there are two things that struck me about this post. One, at the same time as saying he supports the Me Too movement and embraces it, his exact words, he is also doing the exact same thing that the Me Too movement is against. You know, a man in power being accused of sexual misconduct and denying it. That's kind of what the whole Me Too movement is about. What an idiot. And secondly, he also just explained how this story broke. He said that both women had known CTV reporters. Now, I'm not saying this is what happened, but With chances are, with a provincial election coming up, you know, and CTV News reporting the news, and an election is news, so them doing their job, Patrick's name probably wound up popping up every now and then, you know, and with Patrick being the leader of the Conservative Party, so people were probably talking about the election and the leaders and what they thought of them. And chances are, chances are, a couple employees were sitting around talking about, you know, who they thought was going to win the election, what they thought of the party leaders, you know, who they might vote for, that sort of thing. And one of them probably piped up and said, yeah, but Patrick Brown's kind of a skeevy asshole. I have a friend who had a run-in with him. And the other one piped up and said, no fucking way. I had a friend that had a run-in with him.
So, you know, they probably looked into it, realized that, hey, there's something here. And, you know, as a news agency, did their job and reported it. Because, you know, this is news. And they're a news agency. And, you know, I would really like to know if the person that's potentially going to run the province that I live in is a skeevy asshole. Scummy asshole's okay. Skeevy, not so much.
But anyways, regarding Patrick's defense against his first accuser and regarding regarding how he did not own a two-story house at the time, the alleged incident occurred in 2007. Patrick bought a two-story house in 2007. However, at the time that he bought the house, Uno would have graduated from high school and had turned 19. So, I mean, theoretically, he could have bought that house a month after she graduated from high school. And I mean, when you're trying to think back to something that happened 10 years ago,
you might get your dates mixed up. You know, that is a thing that happens.
And again, it's not like Patrick came out and said, well, this just can't be because I've been living on a houseboat in Lake Simcoe.
So it's impossible for me to have an upstairs bedroom, therefore she must be mistaken. Or why not go the silver route and say,
because these alleged incidents occurred about a decade ago, I have no recollections of such events occurring. And again, regarding his defense against the second accuser, really, dude? She kissed you? That's what you're going with. And then you're going to go that extra mile by saying that your girlfriend was in the other room. But you're such a great guy that you drove her home. That's what you're going with. Jesus Christ. Dude, use your brain. If she's saying that the only two people in the bedroom were you and her,
the only two people that really know what happened in that room is you and her. So Patrick could have easily just said, I don't remember everything that happened that night, but I remember that she wasn't feeling well.
So I had offered to drive her home, which I did.
And add a touch of silver.
I can assure you that no inappropriate behavior had occurred. See, that's what I mean about being diplomatic. Deny everything,
but with a touch of class.
Don't paint your accusers in a negative light. You know, if you're going to be an ass and deny everything, at least do it in a way that, you know, you don't look like a giant douchebag. Oh, and in the interview that he gives to The Sun, he says that he's hired someone to do forensics, he's hired a PI, and apparently has a very strong legal team. So, I mean, he's doubling down. So that was on February 11th. And this is kind of where shit gets nuts. Because CTV News isn't backing down. So much so that on February 13th, they write an article about it and do a broadcasted segment on it. Basically saying that Patrick Brown is full of shit and he can go fuck himself. CTV says that regarding Uno's story, the woman who he stuck his dick in her mouth, allegedly stuck his dick in her mouth. CTV News basically says, okay, fine, she was 19 then. Doesn't fucking matter. The shit still happened regardless of what her age was. That's not the issue. The issue is you're in your mid-30s bringing home an impressionable drunk 19-year-old and then you stick your dick in her mouth. That's what the issue is. And I think it's fair to say that I expect better behavior from my elected officials. And you know how way back in the beginning, his very first statement, Patrick said that he was raised on good values? I would not say that is something that I would consider as good values. No disrespect for his parents, I'm sure they're very nice people. Just unfortunately, your son's a twat. Even if it was consensual, think about it this way. Would you want your 19-year-old daughter sucking the cock of a 35-year-old? No? Exactly. And furthermore, CTV News had somebody come forward that she's actually a friend of Uno, and she says, she, referring to Uno, called me back and just said, he whipped it out. I'm uncomfortable. I'm coming over. I said, okay, because he's on the same street as my parents, which I assume is where her friend was at. So, I mean, yeah, makes sense. You want to leave, get out of an uncomfortable situation, so you're going to find the closest safe spot. And you have a friend that lives just down the street? Perfect. And CTV News reports regarding the friendship between CTV News reporter and Doze, they just say that they took the steps before publication and broadcast to ensure there was no previous contact with any of the journalists that would influence the reporting. So they're just basically saying, yeah, fuck you, we took the necessary precautions. This is when shit on the internet just, like, really got out of hand. This is when one of the women's identity was found out and posted everywhere and just, like, a bunch of garbage being said about them. And basically just being, like, assaulted on the internet. And trust me, there are things that just can't be unseen. So they wind up making statements regarding Patrick Brown's defense, I guess. So Uno says, I stand absolutely by the truth of what I said to CTV. There is nothing in what Patrick Brown alleges that undermines the core truth of what I have experienced with him. I am not prepared to engage in a tit-for-tat in media about the precise details of how I was victimized beyond what I already disclosed to CTV. I can say that going public with this incident has exposed me to verbal abuse that no human being deserves. The comments made about me on social media were demeaning, victim blaming, and misogynistic. My privacy was invaded, my character was assassinated, and I was subjected to gratuitous slurs about my private life and relationships. The comments that I have made have been subjected to ignore altogether the abuse of power by an older, sober man over a young, intoxicated woman in this case. The comments construct a false, discriminatory, and cruel representation of the truly debilitating stress the women who are subject to sexualized abuses of power have to endure. I made my experience public because I want to help other women feel safe in coming forward themselves. Instead, what I have experienced is cruel, uninformed backlash. This demonstrates that if we are able to attain true gender equality, we still have a long way to go. As Canadian, I am saddened by the reactions of far too many people on social media. There are many, many people who still stand behind me, and I want to say thank you to them. This whole experience has been tremendously difficult for me. It is now time for me to focus on moving beyond this painful ordeal surrounded by those that care for me. So, I mean, yeah. And then her lawyer makes a statement. That's how bad it is. She had to get a lawyer. So her lawyer makes a statement saying, these are the sorts of collateral details that inevitably fade over time. Equally importantly, collateral detail witnesses themselves often have the same frailties of faded memory and or their own reasons for giving answers that distance themselves from controversy. These sorts of issues arise routinely in historical cases and cannot be blamed on survivors, because coming forward is such a difficult act for which it often takes years to gather the strength and courage. Like, he's basically saying, like, come on, guys, don't be dumbasses. Like, use your fucking brain. And then so then Doze winds up giving a statement. And I actually feel really bad for her, because she, you know, she's the one that really got the brunt of things. And she says, having read the statements made by Patrick Brown to Post Media on his Facebook post over the weekend, I continue to stand by the detailed accounts of these events that I previously provided to CTV. And that's it. And really, I can't blame her. Like, I'm even impressed that they made statements at all. Like, if I was in their shoes, I'd just tell everybody to go fuck themselves.
I guess Patrick didn't really like the response that CTV News gave, because
on February 14th, Patrick takes to Facebook again. I swear, heartbroken teenager.
And it's more of the same shit over again. But he finishes off with this statement here. Here is my message to CTV News. You lied. You defamed me. I will not allow your brand of trashy journalism to hurt another person in this country.
Says the guy that's been doing the double Dutch rudder with the Toronto Sun the entire time this has been going on.
Anyways, he goes on.
And here is my message to my accusers. Both of them. If you truly stand by your allegations, then I urge you to contact Barrie Police and have them lay down charges. Barrie Police can be reached at, and he actually gives out the phone number. These types of allegations should be dealt with in a proper and fair forum. I will be telling my story tonight on Global News. Please watch. Finally, and most humbly and sincerely, thank you to the dozens of candidates and caucus members, thousands of Ontario PC Party members, and tens of thousands of Ontarians who have supported me and my family through this difficult time. This is not over. I just love that final paragraph there, because the whole thing is just basically this massive rant about how CTV News essentially fucked him over. And then there's that last statement of like the obligatory political statement where it's like, and now thank you to my sponsors, and I swear I'm not a crazy person, so please still elect me. I swear I am a sane and stable choice to be your elected representative. But at the same time, this is not over. I just love that. So then CTV News releases a statement saying, CTV News continues to stand by its reporting on Patrick Brown. Patrick Brown's allegations regarding our reporting are false. As we reported once again last night, the two women have reiterated their allegations of sexual misconduct by Patrick Brown. His attacks on our journalistic practices are groundless and wrong. CTV News continues to ask Patrick Brown if he thinks the two women accusing him of sexual misconduct are lying. He has yet to respond. CTV News will continue to report on this matter undeterred by Patrick Brown's groundless allegations.
Holy shit. Yeah.
And the interview that he gives with Global is one of those super serious interviews, just like unnecessarily melodramatic ones. And really, he's just reiterating the same thing over and over again. And I mean, this is February 14th, Valentine's Day. This started January 24th, and this has been front page news that entire time. When was the last time you can remember anything being front page news for more than a week? And we're going on a month now. So then on the 15th, Patrick takes to Facebook again. And in this one,
he links some articles that he thinks proves his innocence. Two of them are from the Toronto Sun, and one of them is from CBC.
And then he also says, CTV News keeps saying I'm refusing to answer the question of whether my accusers are lying. Hear me loud and clear, CTV. The answer is yes! Exclamation point at the end. In the court of public opinion and among many of the journalists I've spoken to, these allegations are now seen for what they are, fictitious and malicious. Right now, everyone is asking me two questions. One, am I suing CTV? And two, what are my future plans? To the first question, the answer is a resounding yes. I am suing CTV. My lawyers are talking to CTV. Early this week, CTV lawyers agreed to ensure that all emails, texts, and other correspondence related to this travesty are held independently for safekeeping. As for my immediate future, I'm spending a lot of time on the phone listening to my colleagues.
And that's it. That's his plan, is to just be on the phone and listen to his colleagues, because that's it. He just goes on from there to say that the second part of his Global News interview is going to be airing that night.
But whatever, not important. And then he closes off with, stay tuned, this is not over.
Again with the, this is not over. Seriously, I know 16-year-olds that are less dramatic than this. Jesus fucking Christ, this guy. Ugh, he's just completely fucking himself over at this point.
And CTV News responds again, saying that CTV News stands by our reporting and will actively defend against any legal action. We welcome the opportunity to defend our journalism in court. And at that moment, my little troll heart just developed a little crush on CTV News, but they're owned by Bell, so can't be that great.
Oh, and I watched the TV broadcast of this one as well. At the and the reporter, when she says, "We welcome the opportunity to defend our journalism in court," she has like the biggest smirk on her face. It is amazing. So that was February 15th. And I think at this point, we can all agree that, you know, he's not off the hook. He hasn't definitively proved that there is no way that these allegations could have occurred. At least in my opinion, you know, there hasn't been anything brought forward that says he couldn't have possibly have done this. I mean, had he come out and said that he's been identifying as a gay man for the last 10 years, maybe. Okay, that was terrible. No. But you know what I mean? I mean, yeah, like none of this has been proven in court. The women could be lying. That is a possibility. I would really like to think that they're not. So anyways, February 15th, Patrick's character is still questionable at this point. Yes, we agree? Okay, good. Because on February 16th, Patrick enters the race to run for the provincial conservative leadership again. He says that his name has been cleared and he is good now. Copyright by Crime and Sports. He says that he passed 2 polygraph tests, that the alleged events are completely false. "I think my name has been cleared and it's now about getting Ontario back on track."
Mr. Brown, that's not really how it works. Just because you think your name has been cleared doesn't mean that it actually has.
So yeah, he enters to run for leadership. And once again, CTV releases their statement of the proverbial fuck you. But Patrick has to enter the leadership race as an independent because his caucus wound up kicking him out earlier that day. So I mean, like, I don't know if this guy is just that arrogant or just that dumb. What person with any sense would think, "I know what'll convince people, a polygraph test"? Big fucking deal. Want to know who else passed a polygraph test? Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer. Yeah, real convincing. And so now a lot of people, including myself, are kind of like, what the fuck? Like, can he even do that? What's really funny is the conservatives are just like, fuck that. No, we're not okay with him running. This is not okay. But due to legalities, Patrick was given the all clear to run for leadership on February 21st. Then on February 24th, Patrick served CTV with a libel notice, because that's exactly what you want to be doing during a campaign, is being caught up in a lawsuit, especially one that has to deal with sexual misconduct allegations. Oh, and I forgot to mention, on February 19th, he tweets, "A former member of my senior staff stole my personal financial information and then deceptively provided an incomplete and misleading version to the Globe. Attached is the 2016 affidavit that proves the deal," in quotations, "reported by the Globe never happened." And then he posts the actual legal document. And I mean, even if that's true, dude, like, don't post that on Twitter. Like, seriously, dude, hire a PR rep. But none of that matters, because on February 26th, the Ontario Integrity Commissioner said that they are investigating a complaint that was lodged against Patrick Brown. Not regarding the sexual misconduct allegations, but regarding, you know, his $2 million house and multiple cross-continental trips. You know, because those are the important things. So that was around, let's say, 1 p.m. on the 26th. At 2 p.m. on the 26th, Patrick announces that he's stepping out of the leadership race, saying that he needs to focus on clearing his name against the misconduct allegations. Which is funny, because didn't he say that he cleared his name of that less than 2 weeks ago? And he says that he needs to protect his friends and family, because this has been a very trying time for them too. So February 26th essentially marked the end of the Patrick Brown saga. And I just stuck to the main events and general facts of this whole situation, because there's just so much more information out there. Like, from someone secretly recording the caucus meeting that Patrick Brown was part of when the allegations first came out,
to Patrick Brown currently being 39 with a 23-year-old girlfriend who's also his intern. That doesn't sound familiar at all, now does it? And I decided to leave that stuff out because, one, I really didn't feel like going through the effort of verifying all that information. And two, it's just more of the same where he just comes across as a pompous asshole. So really, if you think about it, I'm helping his image by not including that stuff in this episode.
So on March 10th, the Conservatives wound up electing Doug Ford as their new provincial party leader. And then on March 15th, they decided, you know what? Let's wrap everything up in a tight little bow. And made the, quote, unanimous decision to deny Patrick Brown eligibility to run for his area in Barrie Simcoe area. And basically just said, go fuck yourself. And when they did that, Patrick finally learns some sense of diplomacy and tweets out that after much consideration, he will not be running for the Barrie riding. And he's confident that the next candidate will be the right person for the job.
I mean, if he did that in the first place, he might still have a job now. Or, you know, maybe down the line make some sort of comeback. I honestly have no idea what he intends to do once his term is up, and quite frankly, I don't care. The guy is a complete and utter twat, and everything that's happened to him since the allegations came out has been his own damn fault. I think this has been an excellent example of how to not. So if there's any politicians or even aspiring politicians that are listening to this and you get accused of sexual misconduct, don't follow what this guy did. In fact, do the exact opposite and you might be fine. You could also just not be a douchebag, but if you are going to be a douchebag, don't do a Patrick Brown.
So there you have it, everybody. That was the very public disgrace of Patrick Brown. So I guess we'll see what happens in June when we finally have this provincial election. I will be talking about Doug Ford eventually. I will be talking about Doug Ford at some point in time, because his brother, Rob Ford, at one point was known internationally as Toronto's crack-smoking mayor. So if you like this episode and want to hear more on a perhaps more frequent basis, go ahead and do the obligatory rate and review thing. And if you want, you can email the show, littledemonspod@gmail.com. You can follow the show on Twitter at... Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter at Little Demons Pod. You can follow me on Twitter at Tiny Doom Fists. And I am on Facebook at Eris Strife. That's E-R-I-S-S-T-R-I-G-H. Oh, and I also have Patreon if you want to help me get out of the hellhole in which I currently live. It's patreon.com/littledemons. And before I go, I just want to give yet another shout out to Crime and Sports. Honestly, please go listen to them. James and Jimmy are wonderful, wonderful people. My personal opinion is that Crime and Sports is the best podcast out there. And I also want to give a shout out to 8-Ball Sports Show. They've been really good sports about me trolling them for the last month or so while I've been ignoring adult responsibilities. So thanks for that. I really appreciate it. And I guess I'll see you around. Bye.